Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Zach Meckler.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and I am joined by some other person that is not of relation to me, but I feel like he's family. That's a different way of saying my brother from another mother. I'm sure that will also become a tired trope that we'll have to toss to the side at some point due to some of our trolls. But we love the trolls too, don't we? How you doing, Zach? One Zach Meckler. I always got to give you the full introduction or I feel remiss if I don't.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. You know, it's kind of this weird lull now that the draft's over. So I'm kind of just sitting here twiddling my thumbs until next April. So, you know, we'll see what happens between now and then.
You know, I'm realizing if the XFL hadn't stopped, they would have had the championship game the day after the draft, which I think would have it would have had some more, maybe more interest, especially because people would have watched the draft on ABC and ESPN, which it was simulcast, you know, between both networks. But ESPN, I believe, was going to have the championship game, and that would have given us a little bit extra football, and then all of a sudden we would still be stuck in the same rut. There would be nothing going on. So, although there may be like some off-season workouts or rookie mini camps where you get to hear news like a Duck Hodges or somebody like that. You get to, you know, blow up these little microcosms of news that aren't really news. And I guess that's where we're at today too, because Zach and I share an equal pet peeve. Oh, you thought we were going to go and grade the Steelers draft. No, we don't do silly things like that because you know what? You don't know what's going to happen within the next year, 4 years. What's the average lifespan of an NFL career? About 3 years on average, 3.5, somewhere in the middle there. Rookie contracts are 4 years long. So we're here today to talk about all of this silliness. And I want to make up like a word, like cranosity, like crazy insanity or something, because I don't know. I lose my mind trying to think about this. And you and I talked about this on the side. We talked about it in the back rooms, and I think it's the best place to start before we talk about, you know, average NFL careers and player potential and looking down the road. Let's just look at this on paper, Zach. The Steelers didn't pick until the second round at pick 49. They did not have their usual third-round pick. They had to kick Dante Moncrief to the curb for the compensatory pick formula to kick in and get that nice higher third-round 102 overall with Le'Veon Bell having left and signed with the Jets. Picks 49 and 102 on paper, when you only have six picks overall, 49, 102, 124, 135, 198, 232. Let's not assign names to any of that. You're getting the 49th, in theory, the 49th best player, the 102nd best player. How good of a draft grade can you get?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, you have to look at like names aside. Like, it comes down to you're hitting your knees, and that's why I think the whole notion of like the positions of where they picked or what's important. I know I talked about this after the after day three of the draft, Brian. They hit, as far as I'm concerned, the six most pressing needs. You know, you can sit there and argue quarterback until you're blue in the face, but they hit six needs that they needed. Whether or not you like the player is a different thing. But when you have the value that they had with these picks at 49 and 102 especially, you're not going to get Joe Burrow. You're not going to get Chase Young. You're not going to get, you know, Von Miller. But who's to say that these guys won't be effective just because of that point? So we're going to give them a C or a D or even an F grade in some cases because of just the slot value. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. I don't understand that logic. It doesn't really show, in my opinion, any type of recognition of what they were able to do with the capital that they did have.
You know, I'm still kicking myself, much like I was several years ago when they took Juju. And, you know, Juju was further off my radar than Chase Claypool was. I have texts to verify this, maybe even some back room talk, but I definitely was talking with my cousin about this. Even before the pick happened, he was pushing for Mims. I know some of the guys in the back rooms, maybe even yourself, liked Mims. I know we were all over Dobbins. My cousin, you know, he's kind of a yinzer too, but but he's an Ohio State Buckeyes guy too. So we were looking at JK, and you know, we're approaching this pick 49, and we're thinking me and Brian were talking here the whole time. Now I know you're a Clemson guy, right? So you weren't necessarily against JK, but you probably didn't have the same kind of confirmation bias that myself or Brian or even my cousin did. But I texted him and I said Claypool's still there, and I didn't really Claypool was another one of those guys, like when you looked last year and you saw DK Metcalf, for example, and he was the combine freak of nature with a lot of his measurables and how he tested. And I'm just like, this guy, he won't be there when the Steelers, the Steelers don't even have a first round pick. So I totally it was guys like him or like DeAndre Swift that I didn't even, it would have been nice to have them there, but I just completely dismissed them as, and of course others, obviously Chase Young or somebody like that, I wasn't thinking would be there at that pick. Or be their pick. So when they announced Claypool, I was like, holy cow, it actually happened. You know what I mean? Now I feel like an idiot for having not said it, but I was mocking JK in my spot anyways, because I was convinced they would probably go with a running back. I had no problem with them going wide receiver. All of a sudden, everybody else is like, oh my God, they go wide receiver. Well, these are the smoke screens that get sent too when you're dealing with this stuff to throw people off your scent and get the guy that you want. A lot of teams felt that Claypool is like this bigger body guy. Some were trying to pigeonhole him into being a tight end instead of a wide receiver, and this is the type of player that the Steelers, they gravitate towards this stuff, just like with defense. Like there weren't as many, especially back in the day, as many teams running a 3-4, so going and grabbing an outside linebacker, sometimes you had your pick of the litter and you could get some real quality talents because everyone else was running a four-man front. They weren't using the same type of edge rushers off the edge there, like a TJ Watt, but you go back in the day to like, let's say, Joey Porter or somebody like that. Those are the type of players that not every team was out there trying to acquire, and it fit into the Steelers' scheme, it fit into their system. This is the way this works too with a Chase Claypool. Some teams are trying to fit him the round hole in the square peg. They're trying to fit him into a tight end role. Does he primarily play outside? Does he do this? We know the Steelers move wide receivers all over the formation, and I think that was maybe part of the problem last year too, was even though Juju was also banged up, he was making a lot of his bread coming out of the slot, creating some mismatches because he too is a grown-ass man, when it comes to being a physical football player. You add Claypool to this now, and I know they come out already said, hey, they plan on having him on the outside. Well, yeah, he's fast. Go figure. It's another thing where it creates some different mismatches, and of course, we can talk until the cows come home about adding Eric Ebron, Vance McDonald being healthy, et cetera, everybody else, Ben coming back, all this other stuff. But just looking at it, who can get on the field right away, who could end up playing? A wide receiver is probably going to get on the field first over, I still don't think if they take Dobbins, that Dobbins necessarily leapfrogs over Connor or even Benny Snell for that matter. And I know a lot of people are going to, sneer at that, but it's just the way the Steelers have operated with their running backs. You go back to when James Connor came out of college, he had the top selling jersey, he was Mr. Popular. Now everybody throws him under the bus, but because he's been banged up and whatnot, but it still doesn't mean he's any less talented. It still doesn't mean he couldn't play 16 games at this upcoming season. What's that do for that first pick? All of a sudden, you sit in December, you have James Conner, who becomes a Pro Bowl player again, and then what are you talking about? You wasted a pick on somebody like Dobbins, right? So what's the better fit here? Get somebody like a Claypool, who's a big body target, fast, something that he doesn't fit the wide receiver mold of anyone else that's currently maybe on that depth chart. Maybe a Deion Kane, but we'll see about that. You know what I mean? We don't know where we're going with that. So he has an opportunity to get on the field. He has an opportunity to be one of Ben's favorite targets. He has an opportunity to score touchdowns. I think this fits a better need here. And a lot of people are like, well, why would he be there if he was any good at 49? It's like, before the draft, how many wide receivers did they have with a first-round grade? You know what I mean? I understand he might not have been in that top elite tier, but when you were just talking about this, when you get down into that very next tier and there were like those names like Mims or Claypool that were sitting there, there was a sharp drop-off once you went from there further down, but yet the Steelers are getting knocked for this pick.
Yeah, I mean, when you get beyond Claypool, I mean, if the Steelers had another pick, like if they had their standard third-round pick, or maybe an earlier third round pick because of some trade or something like that, you think that maybe they don't take Claypool. But you have to consider the fact that they were dead set on getting a big body receiver like him, and Claypool was their dude. the whole adage of, well, he would have been there later on. You don't know that. And I always say that because that's my least favorite excuse. Well, you could have traded back and still got the guy. You don't know what teams are coming up after the Steelers that had Claypool as their guy and just went in a different direction after the Steelers took him. That being said, if Claypool is your guy, you're not going to wait and risk to pick 102 to have him not be there. Because really, after Mims, Claypool, and Van Jefferson, there was a pretty decent drop-off. I mean, you have Lynn Bowden that went shortly thereafter as well. You know, but now he's being labeled as a running back primarily with the Raiders. And, I mean, he'll be flexed out to receiver. But he's not a purebred receiver. He's not going to be the same type of guy that you have with Claypool. And then after that, those guys are going in the mid-rounds because of – not because of this being a deep class, but because there was a very clear drop in that tier. You know, Claypool was at the end of that second tier. Mims was at the end of the second tier. And I truthfully believe that any other season – a guy like Claypool, who has that size, has that length and that physicality and that speed, we're talking about a fringe first-round pick here. We're not talking about a guy who, you know, well, if he's not that good, why is he there at 49 type of deal? There's guys that fall all the time for whatever reason, whether that's the depth of the class, whether it, for a guy like him, there's probably teams, like you mentioned, that didn't – probably had him viewed more as a tight end. There's some that probably had him viewed as a receiver. But you also look at the receivers that went ahead of him. Like the 49ers, they took Brandon Ayuk. I mean, that's a very niche type of receiver. Mm-hmm. The Eagles taking Jalen Reagor. It's a very niche type of receiver. These guys are not the same type. Teams look for that particular type of receiver. The Steelers clearly wanted a big, physical, fast receiver. These other guys clearly wanted more of the smaller guys that are more in the mold of Deontay Johnson. The Steelers already have Deontay Johnson. You know, you don't want to have a team full of every single same type of receiver. You like to have some diversification in your receiver room, and Chase Claypool adds that. So there's a very wide array of reasons why he was there at 49, like it or not, and the depth of this class didn't help his cause either. Yes. He was not going to go in the first round. But, you know, the fact that he was there at 49, if he's your guy, you have to take him. You know, we got ourselves so talked into taking J.K. Dobbins, and I preached, I thought they were going to go running back. I thought they should have gone running back. I'm not upset that they didn't, though, because I knew if they didn't go running back at 49, they were going to address it at some point. And obviously they did at 124 with McFarland. So I think there's multiple facets. You know, we look at J.K. Dobbins now. The Steelers didn't take him. We're talking about him as if he's going to be the next Adrian Peterson, the next, you know, Walter Payton, the next, you know, whoever. I think realistically we're looking at a guy who this year in Baltimore is not even going to be the starter, because I don't envision a scenario where he's going to start over Mark Ingram. If the Steelers would have drafted him, as long as James Conner was healthy, he wasn't going to start over James Conner. So unless there's some injury that would have happened to Conner or Ingram, he's going to get touches. He's not going to be the dude. And that's just the reality of it. I mean, that's the Ravens taking Dobbins was because Mark Ingram is, you know, getting older. You know, he's not going to play forever, and they have a future replacement. They already have a deep backfield. That was the case that the Ravens always did under Ozzie Newsome, and now they're going to do under DaCosta. They just always take the best player available, and Dobbins was probably their best guy available. And when you're a run-first team and a power-run team like they are, you're going to take as many running backs as you can. That's like being a pass-first team. You want to load up with as many receivers as you can. You know, Dobbins will be their long-term option there, but we're automatically assuming that he's going to be this all-pro because the Steelers didn't take him, and Claypool's going to be a bust. You can't make that dictation, you know, right now in May. You know, you have to wait a little bit until we get to the point where these guys have developed a little bit in their career and see how they're going to be used by their respective teams.
Well, there's another thing, too. Justice Hill, for sure. Let me see. Who else is there? You know, that's the same thing the Ravens fans are probably thinking. Now, they're probably thinking, yeah, we got a quality player. I'm not going to lie. I hated the Ravens draft because I feel it keeps them definitely competitive at the top of the AFC North, whether it's battling with the Steelers or not. I know a lot of Browns fans are thinking, you know, that hype train is already, you know, getting in motion again for the same they're getting set up for the same failures as last year, if you ask me. But let me see. I was trying to find Baltimore Ravens. Who else do they have? They had Gus the Bus, but I'm not sure if he's still there or not. Hold on. I'm trying to pull that up. Yeah, I was thinking so, too. I want to say that I was trying to find Ingram here, too. Yeah, Gus the Bus is still there and Justice Hill. So Ingram, let me see, turned 30 December 21st. So he'll be headed toward 31 at the end of this season. You want to talk about – we always talk about 31 here as being the drop-off point for wide receivers – 29 and 30 is definitely the drop-off point for running backs. Now, the only thing that may be going for Ingram here is he was a timeshare kind of guy with the Saints. So, you know, he wasn't the primary back, and that's likely the way he'll be used. Well, he was kind of used the same way like that last year with Baltimore because they, you know, they have like a plethora of guys too, that, including Lamar Jackson, which how much do you want to let him run the ball too? So. Yeah. But they're built to run. It's a Greg Roman offense.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, Dobbins, if he has a 50-50 split with Ingram, he impresses, he ends up taking the job. My main point is the fact that everyone's assuming he's going to be a Hall of Famer day one. I don't think he's the starter day one. As long as Mark Ingram can handle the touches, you're going to ease Dobbins into there to keep him fresh. I think realistically, if you look at it, 2021 is probably going to see Dobbins be the guy in Baltimore behind with Lamar Jackson in that backfield. Might be sooner than that. I just don't think you play him over Mark Ingram at this very moment.
And that's the same thing that happens in Pittsburgh at the bar, at the bare minimum, I think. And you still have it's kind of the same situation because the Steelers have Benny Snell. You still don't know what kind of back Benny Snell is going to be. And they still address a need with McFarlane. What's his first name? Anthony. I'm going to get – these are the things I'm going to screw up. I'm going to call Alex Smith – Alex Highsmith Hightower. I'm going to call Anthony McFarlane Antoine McFarlane and probably Anthony Brooks. I got them like all over the map right now. I'm scatterbrained. Especially, it's McFarlane Jr. and Brooks Jr. too, isn't it? But they're only listing Brooks as just Brooks and McFarlane as McFarlane Jr. I've seen it both the other way. But a lot of people are saying, and nobody's crapping on the Kevin Dotson deal, which, you know, from Louisiana, which, you know, Ike Taylor was all over that. That was his, he said Raging Cajun, so he's all over that. But, you know, I know you like that pick. I know we feel if it's a need, and everybody kind of feels, especially with a guard, you look at what the Steelers have done with undrafted players, when they tend to get somebody in the draft, hey, it might work out even better. So especially in the middle rounds, you're not thinking, oh, well, this guy's a bum for any reason. And a lot of people had a lot of things to say that were good about it. Not so much maybe with the running back pick because, you know, they didn't get Dobbins. So now all of a sudden, let's crap on this other guy that comes from Maryland. I think that's the same thing that goes with Highsmith too, which I'll boomerang back to in a second. But McFarland, a lot of people were saying what? There was like a character issue and what – that just came out as being what? False. Totally made up. So if that scared some people off, you don't know how much higher he would have went. You made a good point. If Claypool is in a different draft class last year's, he may go higher. You know, it's all about where you're at. It's the same thing like Mason Rudolph getting to be he's the sixth quarterback off the board a couple of years ago because five guys went in the first round. He ends up going in the third round. He comes out maybe last year or this year, you don't know if he's a first or end of first round, second round or something like that. As much as someone may want to roll their eyes, I'm not going to get into – I got plenty to say about the quarterback position on another show. But I'm just putting this relatively into perspective coming out of college. This is just the way it is. Some of these draft classes could end up being deep, and you're just a – you know, like you mentioned with the Eagles going with Jalen Reagor. He was a different type of fit than Chase Claypool might have been for the Eagles. Different teams see different value in different places on their draft boards. That's the same thing that happens when you get these, what do you want to call it, draft Twitter, the pundits, the gurus, whatever else. They start talking about, well, we assigned this grade, and there was one that gave the Steelers like a D- because he absolutely hated Claypool and said he won't be like an NFL wide receiver, and it's like, I kind of revert to the dude here from the Big Lebowski. That's kind of your opinion, man. So, but who's to say who's going to be what? We all assign these grades to the players, and then when one of these players we feel is, in air quotes, bad, goes to a team like the Steelers, and then all you have is like bad or bad or bad, then all of a sudden the entire draft is bad for some reason.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because, you know, I used to give grades out for prospects, and then, you know, I would realize I was either playing it too conservative because I was afraid to dictate what a player would do, or I would grade the pick and not the player because of the fact that, you know, I thought they should have gone a different direction. I know, you know, I there's been picks where I just thought the player was good, I just didn't like his fit, or I didn't like the team's need to go to position early, which was fine. But I just figured at that point it was not worth doing. And so I haven't done it in a couple of years. But I it's interesting, you know, Freezing Cold Takes is a Twitter page that I thoroughly enjoy. And leading up to the draft and even past the draft, they did a bunch of things where they were freezing cold picks in terms of the draft. And, you know, a couple of them were, you know, this guy criticizing the 1996 Ravens draft class for taking Ray Lewis and Jonathan Ogden in the first round because of the fact he thought they should have gone to the tight end or, you know, there was no reason to take a tackle. You know, both of those guys obviously became Hall of Famers. The whole issue with this, with Houston fans taking J.J. Watt over Nick Fairley because they thought that Nick Fairley was going to be the bona fide Pro Bowler and J.J. Watt was just another, you know, cornbread Pizza Hut boy from Wisconsin. And, you know, obviously he turned into a three-time defensive player of the year for them. So they gave him a bad grade. Teams were clamoring about how the Buccaneers using a second-round pick on Roberto Aguayo was going to be a fantastic pick because they needed a kicker. And he was the most surefire kicker on the face of the planet. We saw that panned out, you know, and I think even back to Bob Labriola tweeting his thing about the 1974 Steelers draft class. And I can actually read that real quick because I have it pulled up. This was the day after they drafted the first five rounds when they, you know, took that, obviously that Hall of Fame historic class that had the likes of Lynn Swann, Jack Lambert, all them.
Yes.
This was in the Post-Gazette. The Steelers seem to have come out of the first five rounds of the draft, appreciably strengthened at wide receiver, but nowhere else. They didn't get a tight end, and the ones remaining are more suspect than prospect. They didn't get a punter, although none of the nation's best collegiate punters went in the first five rounds. They didn't get an offensive tackle who might have shored up what well could be a weakness. What they did get was Swan, who seems to be a sure pop to help, Lambert, who figures to be at most number five linebacker if he pans out, and then three question marks.
From Kent State, you know, that's yeah, probably part of the thinking there back then.
Yeah, so, you know, we jumped to conclusions. You know, I think back, the most recent one I can really think of is whenever the Seahawks were given such a rough grade for taking – I think a lot of people gave them F's and D's because, you know, they took Bruce Irvin, number 15, which was a what type of move. And then they took Russell Wilson in the third round, and they thought Russell Wilson was the worst quarterback in this class, and they gave him a F grade. You know, Bruce Irvin obviously became a very good linebacker in the NFL.
Let's pair that up. Wasn't it – who was it? What was his first name? Flynn from Green Bay had that one really good game at the end of the year subbing for Aaron Rodgers, had like four or five TDs and parlayed that in a multi-million-dollar deal. He was – Matt Flynn. He was to be the starter in Seattle. So when they took Russell Wilson, this is a wasted pick.
Exactly. And then obviously before camp is done, Russell Wilson's the starter, starts every game that season.
Yeah.
You know, we jump to these overarching conclusions, and, you know, it's fine to get excited about prospects, and, you know, every team, every fan thinks that their team is going to have seven Hall of Famers, six Hall of Famers, 12 Hall of Famers on their draft class. You know, we talked about this before. You know, two out of every three draft picks in every class is going to end up being a bust on average. And we're talking about a guy who has no contributions to the league and is pretty much out in that 2.5 to 3.5 year window that we were talking about earlier. You know, of the remaining one third, 9 out of 10 of them will go on to have just like unspectacular careers that will just be, you know, unrecognizable to any other random player playing at any point in the league in history. You know, it's just kind of on a roster. Might put together a 9 to 10 year career, but he's never going to be, you know, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Pat Mahomes type of guy where you're talking about him years down the road. And then there's the remaining percent of that are the guys that, you know, are the ones you build your franchise around. So most of these guys aren't going to be there, but there's no point, in my opinion. I preach this before the draft happened. I don't see a situation where you can accurately dictate what a player is going to do and what he's going to contribute to his team and put together as a career in the NFL before they even put the pads on, before they even get a chance to play in real live action, and before they even get to put together a season. We've seen so many guys just be absolutely abysmal as rookies, and by the time they're in their third, fourth season, you know, they're doing pretty decently for themselves. I can think of a guy, Bud Dupree. Everyone wanted to run him out of town, call him a bust. Now everyone wants to give him a $13 to $15 million a year deal.
Oh, so wait, no. Some people think that's way too much money even for yeah, Bud Dupree.
Exactly. So there's no winning. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, the guy's been consistent. I think, you know, you can make the argument that maybe his production didn't live up to his first round billing, but he hasn't been a horrendous NFL football player. There's a very clear difference, in my opinion, between being a horrendous football player and just not living up to your draft billing. Both can be true. And I think we can't dictate what a guy is or is not going to do. I can sit here and criticize the Packers for taking Jordan Love and AJ Dillon all I want to. But what good is that going to do me if Jordan Love ends up being the heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers, which you drafted in the first round to be that, by the way, and he ends up taking the Packers to more Super Bowls than Aaron Rodgers did. Can I sit there and criticize him and say, horrendous pick at that point? No, because they kept stability with the franchise. So there's these constant circular arguments that make it so you can, it's fun to do grades. It's fun to bash picks and say which picks you love, but there's guys that I love in this class that are going to be absolutely horrendous, and there's going to be guys that I didn't love that are going to go on to have very productive careers. So what's the point, you know?
Yeah, their fans, the Packers fans, that is, they're like real upset about the wide receiver thing, because the Green Bay played it as if, hey, one of these guys is going to be in the third round that we're going to want, and they didn't end up being there. And you know what? Van Jefferson's a good name that you brought up earlier too, because I had mocked him into the third round, and he didn't make it there for the Steelers. Well, late third round, I should say, because of the comp pick. And Lynn Bowden was one of Ryan Lippert's guys, since he's a Kentucky guy. And I could see if they take him in the third round, there's going to be instant comparisons drawn to Dree Archer. You know what I mean? Was he a running back? Is he a wide receiver? Oh, my God. They reached for this guy in the third round, blah, blah, blah. Kentucky, Kent State, you know what I mean? Well, Kentucky's been more of a powerhouse as of late. I don't want to say powerhouse, but they only used to be a basketball school for so long. That's one of those things where I think people assign a label to something, and that's initially where they take it. You know what I mean? And that's exactly what you're dealing with, I think, with Alex Highsmith. You have a guy that I think all of us were talking about him in the back rooms. He was one of the names that came up the most as being available in those middle rounds, and he's from Charlotte. Charlotte plays in the Conference USA. Charlotte hasn't always been in the Conference USA. They've only been in there like 5 years. They were like an FCS school, and they haven't been a varsity program, I think, not even maybe 10 years at the max, if they've been around 10 years. Yes, in college, they're still varsity, because you still have like some you still have club team type deals before they become an actual program. And then you got, I think, Title IX and all these other things you got to work with the NCAA and scholarships, et cetera, et cetera. And they move from being an FCS school. That's, you know, one of my loves, to going into the FBS. And you're not going to hear a whole lot about Charlotte, because there's like 110, 113 Division I FBS programs, and you usually only hear about the top 25. And even within the top 25, how many are you really caring about now with the college football playoff? Probably 6 through 8, maybe 10, depends on who falls off at, you know, the very top of the mountain, or the kings of the hill lose a big game and they might slide within the season. You even see that with, you know, my team, like Ohio State, getting owned by your team, Clemson, and then they end up falling out of it the 1 year and end up playing USC for a bowl game. Well, you don't, you know, you're flipping through and you just see ESPN has everything kind of scattered together for bowl games. This one's sponsored by whatever bank. This one's whatever credit union, Chick-fil-A, this or that or whatever. Chick-fil-A, I think, I don't know, they sponsor like 80 billion college football things during the year. You know what I mean? Aside from being the major sponsor there in Atlanta, their stadium. So, you know, Charlotte plays in one of these things, and you're just scanning the channels on the weekend or the week leading up to the college football playoff now, and there's like 48 or 50 bowl games, and it's like, yeah, who cares about this? So this guy came from one of those schools. He's instantly a bum, and it's just like, it makes me want to like throw things around. I'm like, why don't we just make fun of Claypool too? He came from Notre Dame. They don't even play in a conference, so they're completely independent. So I know they're kind of tied to ACC. I know their other sports are, but for football, they've always been independent. And you know, you can make all these arguments until you're blue in the face. I think that's where a lot of people come from. They just instantly think that this is some sort of reach, that he comes from some school where he doesn't get to show production, et cetera, et cetera. And I know you were the first one. This is the same arguments that come from McFarland. We talk about, hey, this is the kid who ran all over Ohio State. You had Highsmith run all over your boys down at Clemson.
That was the first time I ever even had heard of Alex Highsmith, was when I watched that game. I mean, you know, I know Tina got some backlash because he didn't dominate. I mean, he made their life. He was almost got to Trevor Lawrence multiple times. He did get a sack in that game. And even their starting left tackle, who was in there for most of the game, he was pushing him back into the backfield the entire time. And he's a guy that we're talking about here in the 2021 draft, potentially being a first top 50 pick. You know, and Alex Highsmith is putting work on him. You go back to 2018 when they played Tennessee. He did the same thing. Tennessee's an SEC school. They're not a powerhouse necessarily, but it's still an SEC caliber offensive line that he was putting work in against. and he was doing this against these top teams, then he did it against all the CUSA teams he played, and then he went and did it at the East-West Shrine Bowl. I mean, the guy did what you want him to do. It'd be one thing if he completely balled out against these CUSA teams, and then he completely just shrunk in the moment against Clemson and against Tennessee, and then didn't even step up whatsoever against the East-West Shrine talent. But that's how we can tell these small school players how they jump up when they have the opportunity to play on a big stage, to play on against the top competition, and then go to these bowl showcase games where they can play against other premier Division I talent. And how do they react to that? Alex Highsmith was a standout in all of those phases. He was an All-American, not just an All-Conference CUSA. He was an All-American pass rusher. He showed steady progression as a football player his entire career while he was at Charlotte. And he was a guy that realistically, because of his traits, you know, he was going to go early. You know, my profile on him is coming out soon. But my only big complaint on him is his length, because he doesn't have the TJ Watt or Bud Dupree length that you'd like to have from an edge rusher. But he has every other check mark you could possibly want. He has the speed, the athleticism. You know, we criticized Bud Dupree because of his pass rush toolbox when he came out. Alex Highsmith has a very developed pass rushing toolbox for a guy who does not come from a premier, you know, ACC, SEC, Big Ten program, you know, so it's nice to see the guy do that. You know, one of my favorite comments was I saw someone on Twitter talking about how the Steelers reached on him because he would have been there in the seventh round. And what would he have been there in the seventh round? You can make the argument he might have been there at 124. You can't make the argument he was going to be there at 232.
No,
for God's sake.
No, he popped the off the page.
The guy with that talent.
Yeah.
Even if because he's a small school guy, there's going to be a team, if he's not taken in the third round, a team's taking him in the fourth round, because at that point, all bets are off and you're taking guys that meet that high upside, you know, athletic profile to be a potential, you know, he has a workhorse, he has a great story, he has all the athletic traits you want. The only thing he doesn't have is elite length. And even then, his length's not horrendous. And if there's enough clay to mold there, that if you can get him to become a little bit stronger in the lower half of his body, you're looking at a three-down linebacker in the NFL. A team's not going to wait until the seventh round to take that player just because he played at Charlotte. You know, if Ben Bartsch out of St. John's Division III school is going to be taken there in the fourth round, you're going to take a guy like Highsmith, who's an AP All-American Division I football player, in the third round.
Well,
not because he's just Charlotte.
You get all these things. Charles Harris was a first-round pick. He's already getting traded from the Dolphins. You have Tack McKinley is now getting his fifth-year option renewed. Another Falcon and Vic Beasley, who hasn't even amounted after one good year to what to Bud Dupree has been more consistently on an upswing. Beasley has been a ghost. Who else? Taco Charlton. I mean, we can go on and on. Even Carl Lawson has only been kind of a specialist with even his own health issues with the Bengals. You know, there's so many different factors. It's scheme, it's fit, it's are you going to have an opportunity to play? Are you available to play? All these different things happen. Like that happened with my guy Derek Rivers over with the Patriots. Hasn't been able to stay healthy. Came out of Youngstown State, third rounder. You know, you hit the nail on the head there. But before we close this out, you got to come back to, you know, these are all the things that are impacting grades. Oh, well, they took a wide receiver they didn't need. Here's this outside linebacker from whatever school. And then, oh, they needed a running back. Well, they got a running back, and it turns out he didn't have the character issue. Maybe that's why he slid. But he played for Maryland, and they suck, so he's not going to amount to a hill of beans. But the biggest thing that here is the six picks, the overall number where the picks were slotted, 49-102 et al. What happened to those other picks? They used the first round pick for Minka Fitzpatrick, and they used that third round pick as part of the package in order to get Devin Bush. And at the same time, when they did this whole Minka deal, they ended up grabbing that extra fourth round. They slid some things around, so they moved up in the draft from the fifth. They didn't have to do it on draft day. They did it prior to that. Very smart moves by the Steelers, and you got two of your cornerstone pieces for the defense. We already know one was an All-Pro. The other one was in rookie maybe a defensive rookie of the year conversation last year, and then that's a complete oversight. You go throw those two names into this part of the draft, and this is like a AAA+ draft.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, you can't look at this draft class and not consider what got them to this position, because the Steelers of this draft or not are a better team for acquiring Minka Fitzpatrick and Devin Bush, because of the fact that, you know, they are cornerstones for this defense. You know, we saw enough from Devin Bush to project that as long as he keeps progressing, he's going to be a very good linebacker, borderline great elite linebacker in the NFL. You know, Minka Fitzpatrick's already there at this point, you know, unless he has some massive regression, he's at that point right now. and you look at the draft as a whole, these guys that we drafted this year have not played a single snap this season yet. And we're going to sit here and say that they're busts or they're not going to be as good as someone. What happens if Chase Claypool ends up being the best wide receiver from this class? What happens if Kevin Dotson's the best guard from this class and starts for the Steelers for 13 seasons, 14 seasons? What happens if Anthony McFarland does end up becoming the heir apparent at running back and ends up forming a 1-2 punch with Benny Snell in 2021 and they let Connor go and he ends up being the lead cowbell in that backfield? What happens if Bud Dupree leaves and Alex Highsmith ends up becoming the starter opposite of T.J. Watt after 2020? And ends up doing very well in that capacity. What about then? Are you still going to give him an F grade? No, because they got production out of this class. Hell, as far as I'm concerned, Antoine Brooks, if he ends up being an upgrade over Marcus Allen, that should be a plus right there as a depth safety.
Could be an upgrade over Mark Barron too.
Exactly. So you have no idea how this is going to pan out. These guys could all be very productive players, and they could all suck. But guess what? We don't know at this point in time because it's too early to tell, because these grades are arbitrary, because we haven't seen them perform once with these teams and we haven't seen how their teams are going to use them in the first place. But what's the point?
I know, just give them an F, man. Well, we're up against it for today. I really don't want to talk to him blue in the face. I'm already red from reading a lot of the comments around social media, and there's still people who, it just amazes me, there'll be threads like on these Facebook groups where they've already been talking about this stuff and people have been opining, and then all of a sudden it's like somebody else comes out, so what do you think about our picks, and it's just the same filth over and over again. So Zach, hey man, thanks for joining me once again today. We had a little bit of a short one, but at the end of the week, we felt that Ike Taylor had covered a lot of the bases, and we're going to be talking more in depth about a lot of these different fits with the picks, if not the players themselves. So we don't want to throw it all in here and then have nothing else to talk about in the coming weeks, as news will continue to be slow.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's always that time of the year, but you know, these prospects have an opportunity to do something for themselves. I'm excited to see where this journey takes them.
Absolutely. And our listeners out there, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Thank you for all of you who have sent your messages for the Jacksonville tailgate as well. I believe I caught all of them. If I didn't, shoot over another message in case I missed it. Until next time, my name's Joe, his name's Zach, and we encourage everyone out there, as always, to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.